Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCBQ 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Okay, you are back in the House of Mystery.
And I'm Al Warren. And of course, somewhere lurking around in his dress, we've got Mr. Dave Martino hanging.
I'm lurking around, Al.
Yeah, lurking.
It's good to be here.
Lurking. Have you been lurking? You like lurking. I know.
I do.
I've heard that. There's a whole website dedicated to lurkers, and I think you're...
I'm on it?
You've got a badge. Got a badge. You're up in the top there.
Yeah. Oh, awesome.
So, Super Bowl, did you watch it or not?
I did not, but LA won, right? So that's a good thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good thing, I guess. I just, you know, I'm not a sports guy anyway. So
no, I'm not.
It didn't.
I like baseball better, but.
Yeah. Well, you know, but it was good. So at least they won. And
they won. It was awesome.
It's all good. And I hear
LA listeners are happy.
Yeah, I hear a lot about the halftime show with Snoop Dogg. And
oh, yeah, I didn't hear much about it. But
yeah, people either love it or hate it. Well, since they said it was Snoop Dogg and it was Dr. Dre and Eminem and Mary J. Blige and all this. And they say people over 50 thought it was a great show, and people under 30 were saying, who are these?
Who are these people? I can see that.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know. It's all the same to me. Seemed all right, but I don't watch the football thing anyway. So anyway, talking about balls and football and dresses and all that. So we've got an author today who has got a new book out called Mainly Angst. And now, so just so you know, that's not mainly as in M-A-I-N-L-Y. It's main. Lee, as in the state, mainly state, angst. Yeah. There you go. Isn't that clever? So, Mr. Matt Cost, thank you for being on the show.
Well, thank you for having me. It's good to be here, Al.
Well, like I said, we'll see how it is at the end. we'll see if he hangs up and runs. Okay. No. So, Matt, wow, you've got, it looks like quite a few books here. Like you've been doing this a little while. I find that interesting. When did you decide to start writing?
I've actually been writing, you know, all my life, but I wrote my first manuscript straight out of college back in 1990, historical fiction about Fidel Castro and the Cuban Revolution. And I realized several things at that point. One was I was really a terrible writer. I had to do more research, and I really should visit Cuba. So it kind of hit a dusty bottom shelf. And I worked on my writing, and I, you know, lived life and raised kids and had jobs, owned businesses and things like that, until finally I got a chance to visit Cuba, and I came back and finished that up and found a publisher for it, and it was published in March of 2020.
There you go. You know, in a writer, I always like to find out why you chose to go into writing where you wanted to publish it for people to read.
So the question is, why do I want people to read it? I guess.
Well, no, but you know, the thing is, like, so you're sitting down, like I write books too, and so does Dave, but there has to be some initial thing in your life somewhere that all of a sudden goes, well, this should be published, or I want to publish this for people to read rather than just write for yourself.
Yeah, no, I guess, you know, I certainly would like the accolades of people liking my book, or, you know, occasionally critiquing it so I can get angry with them or things like that. I do feel that I have a underlying motive to most of my books, where not only am I learning something, I'm trying to impart something to other people. Certainly with my historicals, one set during Reconstruction after the Civil War, one about Fidel Castro, another on the Civil War. But even my mysteries always have some underlying social theme, mainly angst, you know, being the one that we're talking about today, you know, sort of spawns from the concept of, you know, the beginning of COVID and the pandemic. And I really didn't want to write about it because everybody said, you can't do it. Everybody's too upset. And I just couldn't stop myself. So I did. And it's based on, you know, the concept of the governor of Maine and the government of Maine shutting down local businesses during the beginning of the pandemic and having masking requirements and things like that. And that's the angst. And I try and showcase both sides because, you know, obviously for health reasons, we should have been careful and we should have shut things down. But it's also very difficult for the business owners. So that angst is something that I'm trying to bring across in that book and, you know, send a social message, if you will. So I guess that's why I might like to have people read my work.
So there's much more than just the top story you're talking about. There's a meaning behind this book besides the drama parts. You want people to take away that.
Yeah, I'd really like people to delve into it. And I try very hard not to, you know, have too much of a point of view of my own. You know, obviously my protagonist is going to have his viewpoint, but I do try and, you know, showcase both sides because I think every story does have two sides. And, you know, I just want to get people thinking about that. And so it's a conversation starter, if you will.
Are you worried about tackling this kind of a subject in the current, let's say, political climate of the U.S. and even other countries, just this idea of mandates and masks and all of this anxiety that comes with this whole pandemic? Because it seems like people are easy to draw a conclusion. So they're easy to say, oh, that's just leftist or that's just right wing stuff. Like it's easy for them to just write you off without really going through the whole details of the book. Does it sort of concern you a little bit?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, on several different levels, obviously there are going to be people that read this book that are going to, you know, disagree with the theme of it or, you know, how certain people are portrayed or anything like that. And, you know, they're going to tear it apart and critique it and, you know, dislike it. But, you know, as mainly angst gets into, it's a really the whole COVID and the pandemic has become a powder keg out there. And it doesn't take much more than a spark. So, you know, I could see people truly getting angry with me. You know, there's been celebrities that have said things that have, you know, had death threats made against them. So I hope it doesn't go that far.
Well, we'll give them your phone number.
Right, exactly.
Why, thank you.
Well, was it hard to live through the pandemic and also go and write about it for long periods of time?
No, I don't think so. I mean, you know, as you probably did, living through the pandemic meant but not really leaving your house for long periods of time. So what else are you going to do except write? I know that I have a lot of writer friends that really had a hard time focusing because they were all caught up in the news and the social media and surrounding it and the hype, but that really didn't happen to me. I've actually been incredibly productive over the course of the pandemic. You know, as I told you, my first traditionally published book, I Am Cuba, about Fidel Castro and the Cuban Revolution, came out right at the beginning of the pandemic in March of 2020. I have since published 7 other books with my publisher, another historical and 2 in one mystery series, and I just Mainly Angst is the 4th in my Mainly Mystery series.
Wow, you're just really tackling all these subjects. Just you know, and to top it off, in this Mainly Angst, you've also got covering sexual harassment, right, in the book?
That is one thread. It's certainly not the main thread, but it's one thread in the book. And it's, you know, just another political hot topic, not political, social hot topic that is out there in the world today. And just, I believe, adds to all the angst, as, you know, certain people don't, you know, feel like certain things are sexual harassment. And, you know, there's the new generation of people that are trying to educate us older people that, yes, that is sexual harassment. And, you know, people get very uptight, and there's a real divide in our country, whether it be on the pandemic or sexual harassment or politics or, you know, gun legislation. So it's pretty lively down here in the United States now.
Well, it always has been. I think it just how much it goes in waves, I think, up and down. You're not writing like this book or books covering these topics to particularly say to someone, yes, you know, wear a mask and mandates, or you're not trying to say no. You're not trying to really tell them what they should think. You're just sort of writing it from a point of view of people involved in it, right?
Right. And you know, my protagonist in this series, Gough Langdon, probably carries a lot of my own viewpoints, and I try not to be overbearing with them, but I do try and showcase, you know, other sides and other viewpoints. You know, there's certain things like, you know, at the height of the pandemic, wearing a mask into a busy establishment seems to just make sense, and I can't really understand the opposing viewpoint on that. But something a little more complicated is a small business owner who has to shut down for 3, 4, 5 months and has no income because of the pandemic. And, you know, they want to continue, you know, making a living and feeding their family. And so, you know, it's not really safe for them to be open, but it's not really safe for them not to be. It's a real, you know, conundrum there.
Yeah, it gets messy, you know, and I'm sort of surprised about how much anger there is on things where a lot of people are not really educated into a field enough to be so angry, you know. I don't quite get it. How do you get your opposing points of view? Like when you're saying you're the protagonist, and a lot of that is you going through that protagonist. But when you have the opposing points of view, where does that come from? Is that from people you know yourself that you kind of get out there and talk to find out how they feel about things?
I guess there is some of them. There's not a whole lot of people with wildly divergent points of view that I talk with on a regular basis. Unfortunately, I think we often get into our little cocoon of our own worlds and surround ourselves with like people, and we should probably try and get out of that cocoon a little bit more. And I'm probably at fault for doing that. But that being said, you know, there's plenty of news outlets out there that are spouting the opposing point of view, and, you know, internet researches and things like that. So,
Well, we can get you on the mailing list. I get quite a few emails saying things to, you know, and you could get to know some people. You know, it's quite wild
points of view. Is this hate mail we're talking about?
Well, there's that too, but there's also some really wild points of view. You know, people accusing me of working for some agency, and there's a lot of points of view about this pandemic, you know, and things around it.
Yeah, so, no, I throw some of them into mainly angst for sure, and go, you know, showcase some of the extremists of QAnon and things like that, and you know, searching for crumbs to, you know, of what Q really wants and this and that, and I forget what they're called off the top of my head, but once you become a master crumb finder, you know, it's like people believe this.
I wonder why that is, you know. I just wonder what makes someone go so deep into it. And so many people, you know, they're down in Dallas waiting for JFK Jr. to come back.
Yeah, well, I was going to say JFK, but, you know, you've also written a book about cults and doomsday cults, and I know that my second Clay Wolf book is about cults called Mind Trap, and it's a real thing out there, how there's a lot of cults and a lot of people that are believing some pretty crazy things, as you know.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I just don't get where it comes from, the need to do that. Like, you're living a normal life and then, you know, working and doing whatever, and then all of a sudden, well, I'm going to go start hanging out with the Q people. I just, you know.
Well, Al, know maybe it's because the normal life is boring.
Well,
people want to get out and experiment a little bit, I guess, and live on the edge. You know, put buffalo horns on their head and break into a Capitol building or something like that.
Yeah, but be like Dave. Wear a dress.
That's right.
Do something that, you know, is not normal, and just go out and start scraping your car wearing a dress, and people are going, wow.
He might have to wait for it to warm up a little bit before he does that.
Oh, well, big time.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. It's kind of strange. So what was it at the core that made you decide to write mainly angst? Was it the story? Was it the characters you're trying to develop? You know, because you say this is the Gough Langdon mainly mystery book 4. So this is the fourth book. So maybe let's talk about the series in itself. Where did it all start for you to write a series like this?
I guess it started, I was a business owner in Brunswick, my hometown, and I got to thinking that, you know, I wanted to write something that was a little closer to home at the time, because I'd struggled with the I Am Cuba, Fidel Castro and the Cuban Revolution book, because I'd never been to Cuba, which I finally managed to do in 2016 and complete that book. But in the meantime, I worked on some drafts of a mystery bookstore owner / private investigator. And it's actually based upon a mystery bookstore that I owned in the town of Brunswick at the time that I started writing that draft. And I also owned some other businesses in town. So it kind of, I was very invested into Brunswick, and I was able to write, you know, very sincerely about it, I thought. And, you know, my writing still needed some work. So, you know, they had to be remastered after I found a publisher and, you know, heavily edited. But then finally I got them into a place where they were good to be published, and I went with that. So, you know, the first one, mainly power, revolves around a problem at a nuclear power plant. And that came from the idea that I was talking to somebody in a bar, and he was a clammer. And he told me that he could walk into right up to the, you know, the doors of Maine Yankee in Wiscasset in Maine. And there was very little security. As a matter of fact, I was saying this on another radio show, Maine Calling, and the head of security of Maine Yankee called up and said, that's not true, and disagreed with me. So if you get any phone calls during the show next Monday night, we could say that. But it was true. I had a lot of people back that up, that, you know, there's very little security at a nuclear power plant. So that was the premise for that one. And, you know, I went on to, you know, mainly fear, and then last year mainly money, and finally mainly angst. And I'm currently writing the fifth one in the series called Mainly Wicked, which started with just the title. I liked the title, so I've been shaping the story around the title.
Well, did you have to do a lot of research into private investigations to be able to write these books?
Absolutely. More so with my other series. My Gough Langdon character is a little bit more of an amateur sleigh, where he is a PI, does have his license, but he's a mystery bookstore owner and doesn't have the street cred that my Clay Wolf character does in my other book, who is a former Boston homicide detective. And so definitely have to do research and, you know, read all those Bruce Robert Coffin books of John Byron and things like that, and try and learn more about the world of the PI. Or, you know, one of the things that's really hard to get into is the interaction of the PI with the police department or with the state police, and try and find out what lines would be drawn there. So that is difficult and does take a lot of research.
Did you want to be a PI yourself?
No, I don't. I'm not quite sure where that came from. I guess I always loved mystery books, and that's why I did open a mystery bookstore in Brunswick, you know, starting out with the Hardy Boys and Nancy Drew and, you know, the Grape Rain and Cyclopedia Brown, and, you know, working my way up through to Elmore Leonard and Carl Hyacin and Robert Parker. So I've always loved mysteries, but I don't think I ever wanted to be a PI myself.
You don't walk around with one of those Sherlock Holmes jackets on and a hat.
Well, I've got the hat and the pipe, just not the jacket. Yeah.
Magnifying glass.
Yeah, magnifying glass. And, you know, it's pretty interesting. So do you like, when we talk to a lot of different writers, of course, and it seems like British mystery detectives, they're different than American ones. Like British tend to focus more on a society behavior, or the mystery isn't something people do. But Americans tends to be a little bit different than that, according to them anyway, when we talk to them. Do you find a difference between American or British mystery detectives?
You know, it's such a difficult genre to pinpoint, you know, from mystery, detective, thriller, suspense, cozy, British, UK, that, you know, there's a lot of little tiny niches within each and everything. I guess I would say that the British detectives do focus a little bit more on social issues, perhaps, than the crime itself. But I'm not really sure. I guess I'm not an expert on British writers. So I'm not sure.
Oh, that's fine. I just, you know. So, where do you get your characters to, because you're doing this over books of four, and so when you throw characters in outside of the main character, where do they come from, and are they there just for one book and to interact with a certain subject, or do you carry them through too?
I mean, I have started my series with a core cast of characters. I like to sort of surround my protagonist with a few colorful characters that, you know, bring some comedy or some intensity to the book and kind of round it out in that way. And then as I progress through the series, there have been additions made to that. Sometimes people die and there's subtractions to that. So, you know, we gain a new regular, or we lose a regular, usually to death. And then, you know, the one and done people tend to be more of, you know, the perhaps who's come to hire the PI or the villains themselves, which hopefully are caught and, you know, put away in jail so they don't return maybe 20 years down the road when they get out of jail, or turns out they weren't really killed. They'll, you know, resurface in a book. But, and, you know, I guess a lot of those villains are based upon people that anger me. So, you know, just be careful.
That's right. You get written in the next book.
You know, these people write reviews on Goodreads or Amazon or some sort of thing. And, you know, if they get a little too aggressive, they might just end up in my books.
At least it's perfect. Just your books with me. I hunt them down.
He does. Well, I'm wondering, how do you experience your characters? Do you have an inner monologue, or, you know, is it something where you hear your characters? Is it more visual for you? I'm just trying to find out if you hear voices.
Yeah. Well, I definitely hear voices.
Me too.
I think it's very internal. Well, it's both, because I often will find an image of my character that matches up what I think, and I'll copy and paste it, and, you know, maybe even print it out and put it on my wall so that I have a visual to look to refresh myself when I'm thinking of what they look like. But what they're thinking, you know, I try and get into character like them a little bit, I guess, sort of like a radio personality such as yourself, you know, that has to, you know, of days of old, which tell a whole story and change voices, or an audiobook person with each character. I try and develop that in my head and, you know, stay true to it as I work through it.
Kind of like acting.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Or do you find yourself acting out the scenes?
No, I haven't gotten that far yet.
Well, yeah, some people do. Some people, they'll even dress up.
Yeah, no, I was in a dress, you know, scraping the ice off my car the other day, you know, just to get into character.
Me too.
Yeah. Oh, that'll be the day. If it's too cold to drink whiskey, he's not out there.
That's right.
I thought he was a Scotch drinker.
Well,
any whiskey.
Anything.
You drink any brown liquor.
I'll take anything.
My characters are all big brown liquor drinkers, so.
Perfect.
Boat gas. So now, you do not have to buy all the books, like, in the sense that, of course, you want people to buy them all, but if you pick up mainly angst, it's a story that sits on itself, right? You don't need to have had read the three books before.
Absolutely. There is no to be continued at the end of any book. You know, I guess I would recommend, you know, if you were consciously thinking about it, that you start with the first book, because one thing that does develop along the way is the characters, and you get to know not only the protagonist, but the surrounding cast of characters, and grow with them as you go book to book. But, you know, if you started with the fourth book, you wouldn't even.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I noticed that you'd missed the first three.
Right, right. It just gives you more detail, I guess. You get to know the character better, right?
Yeah.
Do you have this outline? Do you know ahead of time what's going to happen to your character, like before you even do the books? And you say you're working on the fifth one. So do you kind of have things plotted out, like you know where it's going to end, and these books are just taking you there?
Yeah, that age-old question of the plotter versus the pantser flying by the seat of your pants. And, you know, I certainly am a combination of the two. I will develop an outline, but I won't fill in the outline until after I've written the chapter often. And that outline becomes more something for me to check back on and keep track and say, you know, what did this person say back in, you know, chapter 3, so that I can keep true to it in chapter 23, sort of thing. But as I develop through the book, it usually starts with just an idea that gets me off and running, and I'll write that first chapter to just get things happening. But then in my mind, I have the book broken into 8 parts. And in each one of those 8 parts, something has to go down, something has to happen. You know, there's got to be, you know, whether it's the midpoint where the character, the protagonist, has a bigger understanding of the case that he's involved in, or it's one of the pinch points at, you know, the second eighth of the book where the antagonist has to flex their muscles and, you know, or perhaps put the protagonist up a tree and back against the wall. So what I like to do is I like to know what that big point is going to be at maybe the 1/4 way through the book and drive towards that. It gives me a goal. And then when I get there, I said, okay, what's going to be the next eighth of the book? What's going to be the big thing that drives me towards that? So, you know, I do books in eights.
Well, when you're writing by the seat of your pants, when you're at that portion, have you ever had a character do anything to surprise you? Have they kind of, you know, rebelled against the plot or done anything like that?
I told you I'm currently working on the fifth book in the Mainly Mystery series called Mainly Wicked. And I just got past the halfway point recently. And I said, oh, whoa, that's who the antagonist is.
Yep.
You know, I didn't even know until, you know, over halfway into the book. And I said, that's who it is. It's not this person after all. It's this person. Mm. So, yeah, absolutely.
I guess because you had your own bookstore. So do you take a lot of things that happened to you there to put into this story, or relatable? Or I bet there were some real interesting characters coming into a bookstore.
Absolutely. You know, I owned a bookstore. I owned a video store back when there were still videos, and I owned a gym. Oh. So in Brunswick, I pretty much knew all the characters. The bookstore tended to be, you know, a little more respectable crowd, but when you own a video store, you really get some characters coming through there. And I had quite a few stories from that. So that probably spawned a few more characters than the bookstore did.
Well, I can imagine. Did you have like little rooms too in your video store? Sorry, I had to.
I think you know the answer to that, Al. I believe you were in one of them once, weren't you?
Oh, God, no. I would, but no, I'm not that. I do anything but video stores. I can't do that. I have more respectable than that. Yeah. Well, now that we've talked about that. Now,
I think I heard David snicker over there when you said respectable.
Who made
Well, you know, I have my moments, but I was in Paris once, but that's another. When you sit down to write this, but I wonder now, can you just do it on a planned time? Can you just go, okay, well, I'm going to write today 9 to 5? Or do you have to be in a mood? Like, you have to be sitting in your video store and in a mood to do it.
I write every day. I write, you know, 7 days a week. And the absolute rule of thumb is I get up in the morning, I get a cup of coffee, and then I start writing. And, you know, so I'm usually writing by 6:30, 7 o'clock. And by 10, 11 o'clock, I got 3 or 4 hours in. And if things are going well and I don't have other things going on, you know, if I'm not promoting or marketing or editing or doing something else, I will perhaps take a break, walk the dogs, eat lunch, and come back to it. But if I don't get back to it, I got my 3 or 4 hours in. And I find that very important in my writing. If I take 2 or 3 days off or, you know, even longer, but 2 or 3 days is enough to break the flow and I have to go back and figure out where I was and what people were doing and what was happening. And that's just a real time waste.
When you're bringing characters in, like you talked about the governor of Maine and do stuff, do you use the real people that are alive in that job?
No, I try not to, absolutely. But, you know, the characteristics are going to hold true, seeing as, you know, this was a COVID decision. And, you know, the governor is who they were, so somebody could jump to conclusions. And in my third book, Mainly Money, you know, I threw in a United States senator who is being blackmailed, and people might jump to conclusions as to who that is. And I try and, you know, change it up enough so that's not the person, even if they really is the person, just because I'm trying to avoid being sued.
Well, yeah, or being shot. I'll tell you, you know, this is why you're moved away. It's like safety.
Yeah, no, it's just for the winter. I'll be back in the spring.
Well, you think you'll be back. And so is there like a point to the series? Is there something you want people to get out of it particularly? Other than, okay, we talked about some of the points of view, like for instance in the angst book, it's about the pandemic and kind of the different views going on around the mandates and stuff that, you know, that are surrounding this topic. And you talked about Mainly Money and some of these books. So is there a big picture here? Is there something that you hope people take away?
I wouldn't say that there's an overall arching theme that I hope people take away. But in each book, I try and present something. So my other series is the Clay Wolf Port Essex series, which is also set in Maine, but this is in a fictional coastal town in Maine. And, you know, the first book is heroin being trafficked through lobster traps off the coast. The second one is cults, which I mentioned earlier. and the cult that is threatening the town and is pretty much a doomsday cult. And the third one coming out in April is about genome editing and the things that are going on with that right now. Actually, I'm reading a Michael Connelly book right now that's touching a lot of the same things, so I'm finding that pretty fascinating. And then, you know, coming up in September is the fourth book in that series, which delves into unexplained aerial phenomena, which has become a big thing. And that's, you know, called UAPs because that's harder to remember than UFOs. But basically, it's the whole UFO thing. And, you know, we've developed a branch of the government tasked with investigating these unexplained aerial phenomena that are happening all over the place.
Yeah. Just, now I noticed you had like, okay, so you have another series with that you Clay Wolf, Port Essex Mystery and stuff like that. And Bruce Robert Coffin says it's a twisted and chilling tale. Did you have to pay him for that or what? Just
every time I see him, I still have to buy him another beer. It's a standing, you know, I think it's three drinks per visit. So whenever we run into each other, I owe him for that one.
Well, so you're really kind of getting out there on all this, and that's another sort of detective, isn't it, series?
Yes, that's, you know, that the Clay Wolf Port Essex verges a little more towards thriller suspense, whereas the Gough Langdon Mainly Mystery series is more straight up mystery detective. And then, you know, as I told you, I wrote some historicals. So recently I decided to blend those, and I'll have a book coming out next year, which has been completed and I'm on my final edits for it, which is called Velma Gone Awry. And it's set in Brooklyn in 1923. So it's a historical mystery. And a fascinating time period, as I'm sure you discovered as you got into Leopold and Loeb in 1924 Chicago.
Yeah. Do you kind of, when you do that sort of thing, do you kind of do it as a historical fiction? Do you kind of take a little bit of ad lib on some of the stuff, or do you do it?
I wrote two historical novels, one on Joshua Chamberlain and the Civil War and one on Fidel Castro and the Cuban Revolution, that are, you know, almost 100% accurate. I'm just putting some dialogue in where it might not have been known and such, not things like that. My last historical was set in New Orleans after the Civil War during the time of Reconstruction. And I started to veer more towards fiction with that and have a murder mystery woven in to a lot of the politics of the time, that this murder mystery did not actually happen, as well as some of the other characters, a few more fictional characters. And this 1923 Brooklyn book is really, you know, set in a real place. And most of the characters are fictional and the story itself is fictional, but I am having fun. I did have fun weaving in, you know, characters of the day, such as Meyer Lansky and Bugsy Siegel and Dorothy Parker and, you know, F. Scott Fitzgerald. And so it was fun to delve into some of those real life people and wind them into my tale.
Well, how do you get into the mind of your historical characters, whether they're fictional or real life people?
You know, you have to read a lot about the time period to preload, I think. And you have to, you know, see the images and understand the people and how they dressed and how they spoke to get into the fictional characters' minds. But somebody like Dorothy Parker was just a treasure trove of wonderful information, because she has so many quotes that just about any time I wanted her to say something, I could pluck something she'd actually said and put it into place, and it fit, you know, like a puzzle piece. So certain things like that are good. You know, when I'm getting into Bugsy Siegel, I'm glad that he's no longer alive, or he'd probably be coming after me with the rest of the people that I'm angering.
Yeah, it's interesting. But, you know, when you were talking about the writing in around the Civil War and Reconstruction, I wonder, what do you think that mindset, because like, even today, and even if you watch movies through the 60s and 70s and John Wayne and all that, there was still a real positive spin on Confederacy and the whole Southern movement, I guess you'd say. And why do you think that is?
Ooh, and that we must be getting to the end of the show. You're really coming after me with the tough ones now, right?
That's right. That's when we get into the meat.
You know, I don't know. You know, it's, I'm kind of being faced with that. As I told you, I'm on relocation down here in North Carolina, and there's certainly more of that, you know, Southern heritage and Confederacy and Confederate flag pride down here than there is up in New England. So, you know, trying to understand all of that is a difficult one. But, you know, it's hard for me to put myself in somebody's place who where I didn't grow up. You know, I didn't grow up in a small town in Alabama, you know. So how do I know, you know, what culture has brought them up? And I feel like too often that the United States has become divided between that North and South, that Mason-Dixon line. So it's a difficult thing.
Yeah. It's just kind of weird. I just don't quite get where someone comes from when they're in that frame of mind. I guess it's just the way of life of Southern before, I guess that's just something that, yeah, it's kind of unusual. But and Fidel Castro, now that's kind of a dicey character and a person to kind of study a lot. Another controversial person as well, right? So what was your research with this guy? Like, did you go hang out with Fidel?
Actually, I was supposed to be in Santiago at the Santa Ifigenia Cemetery the day he was buried, on the ninth day of mourning in Cuba, but I got bumped off my plane for somebody more important. So I didn't get there till the next day, which was probably fine because the crowds were all gone and I got to go see the big rock that was the monument to Fidel. But my book on Fidel is The Actual Revolution from 1953 to 1959. And I end it on January 8, 1959. And at that point, Fidel Castro is a rock star. The entire world loves him. The U.S. loves him, except for, you know, a few people that are worried about what he's going to do. And it's only after he starts nationalizing American interests, because American businesses had taken over most of the country, and kind of angers United Fruit, which, you know, the board of directors at that point of United Fruit were the Dulles brothers, who were the Secretary of State of the United States of America and the head of the CIA. So those were two wrong people to make enemies of, I guess. And so that started the push away from the United States, and had to embrace Russia. But that's kind of another book if I ever write it. But, you know, when I finish my book, everybody loves Fidel. Except for Batista, who he overthrew and, you know, kicked exiled out of the country. And, you know, soon after, you know, some of the wealthy 1% of Cubans are going to discover that they're also being exiled, and they're going to, you know, end up in the Miami area and have this deep anger. So I guess coming back to your question, is the research on that was really interesting, because most of what we know of the Cuban Revolution was broken to two parts. These Cuban exiles in the United States in the Miami area who had the deep hatred of Fidel Castro gave their version. And then Fidel Castro gave his version, which was carefully manipulated to make himself look like a messiah. So I don't think there's been any topic I've ever researched where, you know, the research material was so polarized and so opposite and so far apart. And finding the middle ground or the truth between those two camps of thought was a difficult task.
Oh, I bet, you know. Yeah, that's just, you know, craziness, that whole, the whole thing. And it's hard because as time passes by, the world's changed so much, and there's not anybody still alive when certain things have happened, you know. It's weird. How do you like social media, or do you? Are you involved in Facebook and Twitter and TikTok?
I probably shouldn't say that I hate it, but I dislike a lot of aspects of it. And part of that is because I'm forced to use a lot of aspects of it in promoting myself and marketing myself and spending more time on it than I'd like to. I guess if I could, you know, scroll through for 5 or 10 minutes in the morning and call it good, I'd be fine with that. But I try and use, you know, social media a little bit more to promote myself. Delved into TikTok just a little bit, but that was a little too overwhelming for me. And I figured if I wasn't a 17-year-old, and the book talks on TikTok are, you know, youngsters, you know, throwing tantrums and throwing books against the wall, and it gets 2 million views and the book becomes a bestseller. So I couldn't quite figure that game out myself. So,
oh, just get on TikTok and throw some book. Take one of my books and say, this is trash, and throw it against the,
okay,
jump up and down and yeah, scream and have a dog in there too. And it's just, it'll be, yep, just fantastic.
I'll rip up Leopold and Loeb. And
yeah, just do it.
Yeah, you know, it'll send you right to the top of the charts if I could, you know, figure out how to get anybody to watch it other than myself.
Well, just have it, film it in the bathroom. You're sitting on the toilet and you're using my book as as toilet paper. How's that?
Okay. We'll give it a shot.
You know,
you check my TikTok feed later tonight, Al, okay?
Well, I'll be looking. This is great. This is exciting. I have something to look forward to now at night. Well, no, it's interesting how, you know, how it's changed the world, but we kind of need it. We need that social media and stuff. Do you like the way to that you can get reviews directly right on, like people can just go on Goodreads and say, oh, this is awful, this guy can't write, or this guy's great and stuff like that. Do you follow your reviews?
I will periodically check them and, you know, see what the new ones are and, you know, whatnot. And I think overall it's a good thing. You know, but there's always the horror stories. I recently realized that the first 3 books of my Mainly Mystery series had been reviewed by this one person who gave it all 3 copies 1 to 2 stars. And I, when I realized that, I was able to message them on it. And, you know, usually I don't start a fight with somebody who's critiquing me because that's always bad form. And this wasn't really a fight. I just said, please stop reading my books. If you don't like them, and I understand that not every book is for every person, you know, and there's plenty of books that are finely written that I don't enjoy, but I'm not going to keep reading the series if I hate it.
That seems to be trending, right? So people like to be in that. They want to be angry about something. So, you know,
yep,
it just kind of goes with it, you know, so they want to be upset. When I'm upset, I read a Matt Goss book.
Or they don't even read it. They just go on and put 1 star down.
Yeah. When in doubt, be mad. I don't know. It's kind of a strange world and stuff. So are you running a website now too? Do you have a website people can go to?
Yeah, I do. It's, you know, the www.mattgoss.net.
Oh, that's an easy one. We'll have that up on our website as well. People can find you with one click and stuff. So it's interesting you're writing about COVID during COVID. And did COVID affect your writing in any way?
You know, I got into it a little bit with you, and the fact that I wasn't so distracted by all that was going on in the news because it was what it was. You know, you could watch 15 minutes of the news and kind of have a grasp of what was going on. And then you could sit down and write, and there wasn't a whole lot else going on in life for quite a while. So I wrote profusely, and I have been. I've sort of got myself into a trend, like I said, of writing 7 days a week, at least 3 or 4 hours a day. And I'm kind of at a point where I've got my foot in the door, Al, and I'm trying to throw the door wide open. You know, I'm starting to get some traction with my books, and I'm getting, you know, I'm getting on the House of Mystery radio program. So I've now hit right. Big time.
Yeah. Well, it's only up, you know, you'll be on, I don't know, something next. Who knows?
I don't know if there's any step up from here.
Well, no, there isn't. As far as radio, right. You're just about, well, Joe Rogan, he's looking for people. you might not like what he talks about, but you know,
he might not like what I talk about either, right?
Yeah, but you know, as long as you're on there, you, again, that love to hate thing, you know. So, well, it's funny. So, stressful things when it's really stressful outside your house, it doesn't bother you. Like if things are upsetting or stuff like that, you can still write. It doesn't change your mood.
Doesn't really change my mood, you know. It changes my mood, you know. I sometimes walk around cursing at people and dumb things that have been written or on the news or posted on Facebook or said, you know, within my hearing distance. But, you know, what are you going to do about it, right? And perhaps that's the beauty of writing fiction, is delving into the story that you want to tell and not having to deal with the one that you don't want to.
Killing off the characters you don't like.
Oh, unfortunately, it's the worst part is killing the characters you do like, but you got to do that every once in a while.
Well, just they'll come back. It was just a dream.
I haven't got into that one yet, but I'll think about using it. There's still people that come up and, you know, like I'll walk by and they'll punch me in the face and they say, that's for, you know, Peppermint Patty in book one.
Jeez, you know, you got to hide. You got to dress up differently, you know. Anyway, well, certainly been an interesting hour and we appreciate you coming on. You know, this has been enlightening. We learned a lot.
Well, thanks for having me, Alan. David, good talking to you both. And, thank you.
Yeah. Now the book we are talking about, this is something that you need to get out and buy. I mean, if you don't buy this, stop listening. Okay. So the book is Mainly Angst, and it's by the one and only Matt Cost, who was our guest. Thanks a lot.
And if you don't like it, don't review it.
Tired of wasting time trying to decide what to watch on your streaming service? Go to our website and look for the Martino Movie Reviews.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.